Today the church celebrates the solemnity of Pentecost, and as was said in right before Mass, considered and proclaimed in many ways the birthday of the church. So happy birthday, because we're all church. Give yourselves a round of applause. And what a wonderful way to celebrate this first birthday by coming around the table of the Eucharist in thanksgiving to God for many things, for our faith and for the grace of God's Spirit in our hearts. In particular, I know we're all beginning to become very grateful that life as we have lived it, at least a year plus ago, is beginning to come back to normal. Soon, restrictions will be lifted. You will be able to sit in any pew you want, not wear a mask. As I roam around the Philadelphia area, there is a certain joy in people's hearts and minds, because we're kind of being given back what life had taken away. For a while, it was tough. This time last year, this church was, I think it was completely empty, I think, at this time. So it was me and a handful of people here serving the altar, and when I looked out here, there was nobody. Nobody. We're grateful for the gift of technology that even today, people join us through live stream, and people were, even though we weren't here, or you weren't there, we were in some ways together. I had a friend of mine who one of those weeks wrote to me. I says, I know that you stand in front of a empty cathedral and you don't even know if people are listening because they're not there. I just want to let you know that we're listening. That we're listening. And that was very consoling, right? Very consoling. But thank God that through God's grace, we're going to be hopefully moving out of this particular time in our journey. I still contend that this time in our journey has significance, and that we need to reflect and pray about what did God want to teach us? What did he want to teach us during this time? In all this that unfolded in our lives as a world, as a country, and in our own families. And also as church. And also as church. We all know that attending Mass virtually, well, it kind of served its purpose. But nothing compares to being here, right? Nothing compares to being here. Nothing compares to the physical contact that we human beings have with each other. Today we have Beverly here, who's going to be received into the church. And she was telling me right before Mass when I met her that her son and her daughter-in-law and her two kids are here with them. One of them, I'm sure you met virtually, right? You met her on a, what's her name? Heidi. You met Heidi, who was born in the midst of COVID, but they live in Missouri, right? So grandma's over here, and she meets Heidi on a phone, on a computer, on an iPad, or something like that. And I'm sure the very first time you lay eyes on her, your son and your daughter-in-law meet Heidi. But I'm sure you could agree with me that nothing compares with being here, right? Nothing compares to having your son and daughter-in-law and your grandchildren come to Philly to be part of your celebration of this wonderful sacrament, and you picking up Heidi. You could have picked her up on an iPad, right? You could have even kissed the iPad. But nothing compares to being here. Nothing compares to that physical contact. That reality, which the Lord understands so well in our lives, also applies to our gathering. And so nothing compares to coming to church and being with other people who believe like we do. Nothing compares to having the word proclaimed to us. Nothing compares to the experience of church and liturgy and music, and nothing compares to being able to receive the Eucharist physically and not just look at it. So we are blessed that we are beginning to come back, and as people get more and more vaccinated and more comfortable, my hope and my prayer is that we will leave actually the virtual world. It was good for a while, I understand that. But in the same way that Beverly couldn't relate to her new granddaughter completely until she was here and not through a device, in the same way, the Lord wants to feed us at the table of his word and of the Eucharist and of our community gathered together. So nothing compares to being here. So congratulations, Beverly, on both counts, for meeting your granddaughter, for being able to hug her and hold her and kiss her and be with her, and not having to do it through an iPad, at least while they're here. I'd like to share a little story with you that I found, which is interesting. A man who was an adventuresome skier went onto some tricky slopes he had never skied before. He ignored the marked trails and raced down some steep terrain, passing as he went a group of skiers standing on one side. As he whizzed by, they called out to him, "Stop, Cliff, stop!" Undaunted, he yelled back, "I'm not Cliff, I'm Bill." The message was sent, but it was not received, right? This guy was sent a message, but it was not received. And so oftentimes that has been our journey. Message sent, but not totally received. In some ways, that was the message that was sent to the apostles, but not totally received either. Throughout most of their almost three years with Jesus, the message was sent constantly, but not always received fully. And so now they find themselves 50 days after the death and resurrection of Christ, in which they witnessed, they had personal encounters with this risen Christ, after his ascension, where they were sent. They were sent to go. In fact, they were told by the angels that appeared, "Listen, don't just stand around here looking up at the skies with your eyes rolled up. Go." Why? Because the future of the message of Christ and the grace of redemption kind of held in a balance. Were these guys going to go or not? What were they going to do? What was going to happen? Would the message die with the death of the last apostle? What would happen? Well, in the very beginning, it didn't really look all that great. It was kind of coming towards the other side. They were scared. They were locked behind closed doors. They were fearful. And their fears were well-founded, actually. They feared that the fate that Jesus had undergone would be their fate too. There's nothing worse than fear, right? It could paralyze us, stop us dead in our tracks. Fear. We kind of understood a little bit of fear as we locked ourselves behind closed doors too, right? Especially in the beginning of this pandemic. You would come down to Center City on the Schuylkill, there were no cars. Talk about fear. There is never a time that there are no cars on the Schuylkill. It doesn't happen. Sometimes in the most absurd of moments and times and hours, you think you're going to get here in 5 minutes and you don't. But you did back then. We were locked behind our own closed doors. Fear. We were fearful of each other. Am I going to get it from you? Do you have it? We would go to a store and someone would come in and the mask wasn't all that well put on, and we would go like this. Trying to be cordial and not to be offensive, but we would move away. Fear. Fear took over the hearts of this early church. And rightly so. Listen, at the end of the day, their fears were actually met. All of them died a martyr's death. They had received, the message had been sent, but not totally received. And so in a balance lay the future, our future. At that moment, it was up in the air whether we were going to be here or not this morning, or whether you were going to be confirmed. And that was up in the air over 2,000 years ago. It was in a balance. Until the Spirit of God made itself known powerfully to them. A spirit that they had already experienced. It had already been sent, but not totally received. As Jesus enters that locked room, the first thing he says to them is actually peace. A prayer, actually, shalom, means that you may be made whole. Because we know how fragmenting and paralyzing and what fear does to the human heart. It breaks us apart. Breaks us apart. So what is Jesus' first words to them? Is actually peace. May you be made whole, healed in the eyes of God. Something very powerful happened there. Because the images that they used to describe, it was like wind, it was like fire. Powerful words for a powerful experience. The gospel writer tells us that he breathed into them. That concept of breath is in the gospel a lot, right? Adam, God breathed into Adam. And what happened to Adam? He came to life. Jesus breathed out his last breath upon the world. We've seen certainly in movies, hopefully not in real life, in our own personal histories, but we've seen when somebody is gasping or can't breathe, and then at a certain, and they're getting purple, and then at a certain moment they go, and they come back to life. The word for spirit in the Hebrew language is actually breath. So when Jesus breathes upon them, he gives them his spirit, a spirit that brings them life. And what happened to this community of apostles at that moment? Well, read about it. Read Acts of the Apostles. They broke out into the streets, into Jerusalem, and they began to preach. They began to share what they had experienced. They began to proclaim Christ crucified without fear, knowing full well that in opening their mouth, it would have consequences. And it did. They ended up in jail. They ended up a martyr's death. And those that they shared that with did the same thing. And they shared it with others and others and others. And that's why we today, because the Spirit came upon that early church And the message that was sent was received. That's why we sit here today. But today, in many ways, is the birthday of the church because it held in a balance. But thank God to them receiving the gift of that Spirit back then has resulted in us knowing the risen Christ. That Spirit continues to come upon the church, celebrated today. In a particular way, Beverly, sacramentally, you will celebrate that today. A Spirit that overcomes fear and makes us breathe with ease. How blessed we are today.